It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Filmmaker and author Danny Boyd describes his new graphic novel, Carbon.
In the storyline here, there was a civilization before ours, a Garden of Eden, so to speak, where the civilization did not obey God's rules to live in balance, and they were sent underground until the time the earth replenished itself.
The story coming up on this West Virginia morning. The coal mining industry supplied close to 21,000 jobs in West Virginia in the fourth quarter of last year. Those jobs generated about $500 million in earned wages to miners, with an average weekly wage of about $1,700. As Jessica Lilly reports, miners are fighting to stay in West Virginia by fighting for their coal jobs.
I'll definitely be one of them guys, I'm sure, on that list. Hopefully not, but I mean, that's what a lot of guys, I mean, I work with guys been coal miners for 40 years and 2 years, you know, and I mean, it's their livelihood.
Corey Meadows has been working as a coal miner for 8 years. In coalfield counties like Logan, Wyoming, and McDowell, workforce data shows coal is still king, remaining one of the top employers and providing some of the highest paying jobs. He works as a section boss in a McDowell County mine. The pay is good enough to drive about an hour from his home in Mercer County. It's coal mining that provides for this West Virginia family.
Oh, everything. I mean, from the gas you put in your truck to your house payment to my daughter's going to college. I mean, everything, you know.
The Environmental Protection Agency released long-anticipated regulations to limit carbon emissions earlier this week. Since the largest carbon emitter in the U.S. is coal-fired power plants, the industry is anticipating a sharp decline in demand for the thermal coal after rules are implemented. Meadows works in a metallurgical coal mine. Met coal is usually used to make steel, while the thermal coal is burned to generate electricity. Still, the EPA is predicting that Appalachian coal production could decline by 30% under the new rule.
I'm a young man, and I expect to get another 25-30 years out of this job. That's probably, hopefully, hope to God it goes through and I can retire and my kids go to college and they go off and get married and I'm a retired coal miner.
If you take mining out of these small communities where these coal miners live, you're shutting down the whole system. I don't think a lot of people are looking at that.
That's Debbie Johnson. She works as the Black Lung Clinic Coordinator at Bluestone Health Center in Mercer County. Thousands of West Virginia coal miners have already lost their jobs. The U.S. Department of Labor awarded the coal mining national emergency grants to West Virginia. The retraining programs is for miners and their spouses that have lost employment since March of 2012. So far, only 369 miners have used the available funds for training in areas such as welding, and only 137 have completed their selected training program and found employment. Corey Meadows.
That's good that they're doing that, but most of the time when you're welding something, you're probably welding a ripper jack for a miner. So, I mean, that goes back to, all goes back to coal. I mean, these guys that are welding, they're welding for us. And, I mean, they're running them lathes and them machine shops for us. And if we don't do our part, then we don't need them.
And Johnson suspects not every miner is eager to just find another occupation.
What they don't realize is these coal miners are just that. They're coal miners. That's what they've been. That's what they've been all their life. That's what they grew up in. 25 years, what are they going to retrain them for? We don't have anything out there for them to retrain them to that they're willing to do or that they're going to be good at.
Jobs are limited in southern West Virginia. Still, former miners have taken training and found employment as CDL-certified truck drivers, heavy equipment operators, and electrical technicians. Johnson, too, points out that it's not just the miner who could lose if the coal mines continue to close in the region.
This don't affect just the coal miners and just the mining industry. This affects every industry in West Virginia. The little mom and pop shops. I don't know how many little mom and pop shops we've had that shut down because there's no coal miners to keep them running anymore.
Kent Sullivan is a retired miner who lives in neighboring Raleigh County. He, too, is worried about the effects the new federal regulations will have on his town.
Here in the southern region where we've relied on coal for so many years as being the top dog, you know, no plans were actually made to bring in other industries to actually offset as the coal market and coal industry went down. And now we're finding ourselves that, you know, people are without jobs.
Although some coal-filled folks are hesitant to admit it, Sullivan is among a growing number of residents in the region who agree that there is a need to lower carbon emissions. But further limiting job opportunities in the area is a daunting threat.
Anything that's getting released into the atmosphere probably has some ill effects, some way, some form, okay? I'm sure that there's a lot of things that we are probably releasing into the atmosphere that we need to do something about.
It might be an inconvenient truth to some in this country, but it's a hard reality for folks in the coal fields. And as coal jobs continue to decline, the most likely result is a continued population decline, as many feel there's no other option than to move on.
Most miners are very adaptable, and most of them would be willing to go back to school and retrain, retool in order to get jobs that are available. The problem is we do not have the industry coming into this area that is profitable enough and that pays enough to actually support a lot of the people in order to be able to take care of their families.
The emission reduction proposal gives states across the country 2 years to come up with their own plan to lower carbon emissions by 2030.
Our elected officials, and hopefully our soon-to-be elected officials, when they get in positions of office, they don't get to the point where they forget about the everyday man, the everyday person who actually put them in office, who listen. I hope they listen to their cries for help and try to come up with ways that we can revitalize our area here in West Virginia, southern part of West Virginia.
Corey Meadows hopes to hold on to his job to support his wife and two young girls.
So I hope they just kind of look back and step back from the situation and really see what they're really going to affect. I mean, this is a lot of people's livelihood that they're messing with, and that's not a good thing, man. It's really bad.
Meadows says he would likely move out of the area if he loses his job. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jessica Lilly in Athens.
5 years ago, West Virginia writer and filmmaker Danny Boyd began exploring the genre of graphic novels as a creative outlet for his work. After releasing Death Falcon Zero versus Zombie Sluglords and a reimagined and expanded narrative of his 1987 cult film Chillers, Boyd quickly saw the viability of a career outside of film. Yet long before those projects came about, he was developing another graphic novel, a mythological story set in southern West Virginia, titled Carbon. Boyd's latest graphic novel tells the story of an ancient race of people and their supernatural effect on the coal industry today. Dave Mistich spoke with Boyd about the book and its relevance in the modern conversation regarding coal, industry, and the environment.
Danny, I want to start off by having you explain the concept of the book. It's called Carbon, obvious reference to coal. But go ahead and take a few moments to explain to listeners what the concept in the storyline of the book is.
That's the problem. It's hard to do in a few moments because it's been rattling around my head in 30 years now since my first introduction to coal living in Williamson and my environmental views that changed over the years. But basically, as an entertainer, I was always looking for a property that could where I could put these pieces into it and still entertain people. And about 10 years ago, it finally hit me. Always go back to the beginnings. Go back to the beginnings. Well, coal was carbon. We are carbon. Coal was formed by plant and animal life, us, over millions of years. What if you reverse that process? So it's that what if, you know, and in the storyline here, there was a civilization before ours, a Garden of Eden, so to speak, where the civilization did not obey God's rules to live in balance, and they were sent underground until the time the earth replenished itself, given immortality, But they stopped caring, stopped praying, and became carbon thousands of years later. An evil coal baron finds a piece of it in that sacred pocket and discovers that that carbon will burn forever. So over a 30-year time period, sends expeditions in to get it, not telling them what it is, and they get wiped out by the Guardians each time. So anyway, that's about as briefly as I can explain the concept. But Dave, it was, you know, I'm a filmmaker, but this was my big Hollywood movie that I just never got to the circles where we could put this kind of budget together. And then when I fell into graphic narrative 5 years ago, it was like, well, holy cow, I can do this now.
The book hits very, very explicitly on issues related to coal and industry in West Virginia. You know, it's a very complex thing here. And also in January, we had the Elk River chemical spill, which, you know, everyone knows what happened to the water supply. And the EPA just this week releasing their clean power plan. Talk a little bit about, I guess, the struggles that you've observed and how you sort of came to terms with being conscious in that way and wanting to politicize it, but very delicately in a book such as this. You haven't really gone there with your work before. Why exactly this issue and why in this form?
Well, I haven't gone there before because I think it's presumptuous of entertainers and artists to take their politics, you know, too blatantly. I purposely waited for, as I said, a property like this where I could cut loose on it, and I really am. I'm fully out now, you know, with this. But I'm not anti-capitalism. I'm not anti-industrial world that we live in. My goodness, we wouldn't have this quality of life. But any normal thinking human being has to realize that the last two industries that you want to regulate themselves are coal and chemical. You know, I'm sorry, greed is going to win out. We need safeguards there. Well, the book had been delayed. It was supposed to come out in January and delayed again. And the publisher kept seeing Charleston, West Virginia on World News, and he called me and said, since we've been delayed, I'm seeing this water thing. Would you like to add something to your afterword about that? And I said, heck yeah, I do. So I sat down and wrote that piece there at the end. So, you know, I mean, the timing is just my good luck. I mean, the timing could have come out with Sago, Upper Big Branch. You know, that's, you know, and I had the idea before those things happened. And that's the last thing in the world I want to exploit. What a horrible thing that we all went through. Not only as West Virginians, but I mean, people all over the world that sympathize with what we're going through. So there was, you know, I wanted to hit that issue of corporate greed at the sacrifice of human life, but also the environmental. I mean, it's just cutting the tops off of mountains and filling valleys and poisoning water supplies. It's just a bad idea.
Talk a little bit about the setting in West Virginia. It takes place down in Mingo County. There's references to Charleston, a few nods to West Virginia State University, mm-hmm. and, you know, Charleston being the capital. Talk a little bit about how the sense of place and the culture and economy, using the place where you live in the region as the framework and the obvious reasons how that informs the narrative of the story itself.
Well, I mean, it really is geography, a story here. And like I said, my first real job was in Williamson, West Virginia in 1980. And as a West Virginian, I thought I knew coal. I did not know coal. I mean, that was the greatest education I could have ever gotten at the time. And there's been a piece of Mingo County and nearly everything I've written since. It was just such a rich part of my life and a strange place of incredible goodness and incredible badness with it all. So it was very important to get the geography here. I mean, you need to go to the coal fields because it's built different.
Great, Danny. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was graphic novelist, writer, and filmmaker Danny Boyd speaking with Dave Mistich about his new graphic novel, Carbon. To listen to an extended interview and see a few pages from the book, visit our website, wvpublic.org. Having more women as leaders in our community is what Girl Scouts of the USA strives for. And yesterday afternoon, the Black Diamond Council, who serves nearly 15,000 girls in a 61-county jurisdiction, including most of West Virginia, gathered together female leaders from the community to discuss the future of our young girls. Liz McCormick reports.
The Girl Scouts of Black Diamond Council kicked off their to Get Her There campaign, which the organization calls their most aggressive campaign for girls to date, aiming to provide every opportunity to empower girls to reach their fullest potential and build a better world. The event included a panel discussion centered on the current state of girls in our own state, how to build courage, how to build confidence, and how to build character. However, the topic that pushed heaviest as a means to progress change and promote leadership among girls was building confidence. Confidence seemed to be the key, and First Lady Joanne Tomblin, a member of the panel, says she thinks it's organizations like Girl Scouts who will help build young girls' confidence.
A lot of young women come from dysfunctional families. They don't have people at home to support them. So it's going to be those organizations that are at least going to start helping them build that confidence. And also we need more women, more professional women, more parents to volunteer to mentor young women and then give them experiences. The more experiences that you have, the more confidence you're going to gain.
Another member of the panel, WVU Law School Dean Joyce McConnell, says she thinks it's very important for women around the state to reach out to girls who may not have the best family life to help build their confidence with support they may not be receiving at home.
It's important for other women to reach out to girls, help girls understand their own talents and their own strength. And so I would say that if a girl has enough confidence to ask for a mentor, that's a wonderful thing. But so many girls won't even have that baseline confidence that we really have to reach out to them. We have to be much more proactive. And it can happen in the churches, it can happen in our schools, it can happen in community centers, but I think we have to take more responsibility.
Princess Young, the chief development officer for the Girl Scouts in Charleston, says she hopes all the people who were in attendance will be proactive and be interested in being a part of the bigger picture.
A lot of folks just don't know. They think of Girl Scouts, they think cookies, camping, and crafts. And for me, today was about everybody learning about the three C's that are in our mission, which is building girls of courage, confidence, and character who make the world a better place. And I think folks got that picture today, and they realize a little bit more about what we're about and hope they want to get more involved in helping us develop and open those doors for girls in our region.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Liz McCormick in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:47. Some dense fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today. Temperatures in the 70s to near 80 degrees. Mostly sunny tomorrow. Temperatures in the 70s and 80s. Rain and thunderstorms moves back into the forecast Sunday and Monday.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the Affiliated Construction Trades, committed to drug and alcohol-free workplaces in West Virginia for more than 20 years. Details at actwv.org.
Keb Moe performs The Worst Is Yet to Come on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
Woke up this morning, wrong side of the bed. Whatever happened last night, I'm feeling it in my head. Lord have mercy. And the day ain't even begun. Well, I got a bad, bad feeling that the worst is yet to come. Didn't get no breakfast, didn't get no lunch, but I did get 2 weeks' notice. They're gonna close the factory up. Lord have mercy. And the day ain't even done. That the worst is yet to come. Got back to mine, heading on down the road. Looked in the rearview mirror, nothing but a trail of black smoke. Lord have mercy. Lord, what have I done? You know I got a bad, bad feeling that the worst is yet come. Well, now the sun keeps on shining, just like it should.
could. When I take a look around me, guess I'm doing pretty good.
Keb Moe with The Worst Is Yet To Come. You can hear this song again and more music on Mountain Stage Sunday afternoon at 2 right here on West Virginia Public Radio. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Cecilia Mason, Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glynis Bohr, Dave Mistich, and Ashton Mara. Our theme music is by Matt Jackford. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thank you.